We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Excited are you?
On a scale from 1 to 10, probably like an 8.5, which is way up from like a 3 the other day.
It was a 3 at the trade deadline, which we discussed on Light Years Premium.
Good plug.
But now you're up to an 8.5.
Very much up to an 8.5. Once he hit that first 3, went up to a 5, and by the end of the game was at an 8.5. So I'm very excited for the Andrew Wiggins era.
Yeah, man, it's going to be weird. I think so. I don't think he could have had a much better debut. This is good Andrew Wiggins. This is if the Warriors get this player on a regular basis and like forget the shot making, he's not going to hit 3 out of 4 threes every game. Let's say next game it's 1 out of 3 or something, right? But if he plays at this level with the engaged defense, with the ability to score the ball, I'll feel pretty good about the deal. The problem with Andrew Wiggins has been he gives you one of these games and he gives you 3 to 4 of those. I don't really know what you're doing. You're kind of asleep on defense type of games.
And that's fine that's fine once Steph, Clay, and Draymond are back in the fold because they don't need him to be that guy on a night in, night out basis, right? And those 1 out of 3 games where he does what he did last night, that might be the game where Steph or Clay has an off night and it kind of just covers up for it. So I think it was Kerr who said, you know, we don't need him to be a star, right? Like he was expected to be with the Timberwolves. They just need him to fit in. And if that's the expectation, like obviously his contract and like his draft status is probably the opposite of that in terms of expectations. But if we kind of lower those expectations to what they realistically are, like if he fits into this system, like he's perfect for this system.
So a few thoughts on that. After I got over the shock they were trading for Wiggins, I kind of came around and said, you know what? I'm not too worried about him on offense. For me, the real question is defense.
Yep.
We'll start with the offense. I think only one of his baskets was out of isolation last night. He might have taken 2 to 3 ISO shots, but relatively efficient, 8 for 12, and to my eye, a lot of that was because he was not going out of isolation. He's an elite athlete, and getting the ball off a dribble handoff or off a cut, infinitely more efficient than Andrew Wiggins at the top of the key trying to create like James Harden. I thought that was always kind of the issue with him. He was miscast as a guy who you know, supposed to be kind of that guy dribbling at the top of the key. Like, he's not LeBron James. He's not Russell Westbrook. He's not one of those guys. But if you get him moving off ball a little bit and kind of getting the ball off a handoff, he can be effective on offense. He won't be a superstar, but he can get 20 points just doing that.
Yeah, and his something that stood out to me just watching him last night was his athleticism in this system, and ultimately with more spacing once Steph and Clay are back, is going to be fun to watch. Like, he obviously didn't have as much room to operate last night as he's going to have, and the Warriors just haven't. I mean,
hey,
obviously
shout out Jordan Poole for maybe his best shooting night of the season,
making though. It rain out there. But yeah, no, Wiggins, like, KD was a prime example of someone who is just like elite athleticism, and he thrived in that spacing. Right, like he could just get to the rim whenever he wanted. And obviously, that's being KD, but Wiggins, just athletically, there's not a lot of guys who can kind of touch him on that front. So I'll be really, really interested to see what he looks like in full form once Steph and Clay eventually are back in. So it was probably one of the more uplifting debuts of a new Warrior as of late.
Yeah, so I expect his offense to kind of ebb and flow for the remainder of this season, because the reality is he's not playing with Steph and Clay.
Of course.
You know, just as much as he can have a good game, the next game he might get more defensive attention because, well, defenses aren't going to guard Kai Bowman like he's Steph Curry, right? And then he might be less efficient. But to me, the big thing that stood out from his debut was the defense.
Yep.
We kind of were joking about it. It's like, hey, we got Andrew Wiggins, and his first game is guarding LeBron James with Kai Bowman as his point guard. You're like, could not, you know, script a worse situation for him to walk into, right? And I thought defensively, wasn't perfect, but he was really engaged, and he made LeBron work. And I'm going to read some stats for you from our friend Grant Lifman.
Please.
He had five steals last night. The last time he had four steals, November of 2017. The last time he had five steals, or more than five steals, was against the Warriors in April of 2016.
Jesus Christ.
So it kind of speaks to, and a couple of those steals were definitely errant Laker passes. In other words, Kyle Kuzma, or one might have been AD. You know, they were pressured and they threw it right to his hands. Okay. But that's just 1-2. He ended up with five. I thought he was engaged the whole way defensively. I thought he made LeBron work the whole time. And quite frankly, if he plays defense like that, I'll live with whatever comes on the other end, because I know as a third option with Steph and Clay, he can do more than Harrison Barnes did.
Oh, no, absolutely. And on that, I think with him, it's just always, are you, like you mentioned earlier up at the top, like, are you going to be engaged? Like, not just defensively, but overall. And if he's even remotely engaged, and it seems like he already is, because again, he's just, one, he talked about like the culture and just kind of that change for him. But like, he knows he can't slack off when like Draymond is right behind him, who's going to yell at him and call him out if he does. So, and again, he has all the athletic tools, like the physical tools, to be a pretty good, at least an above average defender. So it's kind of been inexplicable that he hasn't shown that as of late, or like thus far through his career. And yeah, last night I was fully expecting like Bron to just kind of embarrass him whenever he had to lock him up or try to lock him up. And it wasn't terrible. You know, if that.
Yeah, Bron got some buckets because he's Bron.
Right.
But at no point was it like, you know, like LeBron against like a helpless rookie type of situation.
Right. There were even some times where Wiggins got caught on a switch onto AD, and you're like, all right, this is like a walking bucket. Like, let's just run back already. And, you know, most of the time that was true. There were a couple of possessions where he put up a fight, and his athleticism helped forced AD to kind of change that shot, or at least alter it in a way that you wouldn't expect. So it'll be an interesting tool to have him kind of next to Draymond, and, you know, obviously Draymond kind of guiding and driving the defense. So it's a very, very small sample size, but it was sort of encouraging to kind of see that.
It was as good as the debut could have gone.
Right.
So we talked about this a lot on Premium, but Andrew Wiggins is about to be the ultimate test of nature versus nurture, I guess,
yep.
is the best way to put
it. That's a great way to put it.
Minnesota, not known for their culture. They're trying to change that with new management, but the reality is he's had four coaches since he he's had four coaches since he was drafted, and three different managements. And I mean, they've just been one of the bottom tier organizations in terms of any sort of stability. I was posing this to someone. What if he was drafted by the Celtics instead of Jaylen Brown? Are we sure Jaylen Brown would be better than him, or he wouldn't be at least as good as him? I don't know. But now I feel like we're getting that litmus test, because the Warriors are banking everything on their culture here. And why not? You have Steph Curry, you have Klay Thompson, you have Draymond Green, you have Steve Kerr. That's as good a foundation as you're going to find in terms of just instilling the right type of work ethic and getting guys to, I guess, be the best versions of themselves. So it's just going to be that test. And I think that's really interesting, especially since he's going to turn 25 in the next month. So while he is still young and he's still got, you know, a good chunk of time ahead of him before it's a lost cause, he's also not, I mean, this isn't a rookie or a second year guy. It's a guy who's been in the league for a period of time. Can he really change it?
Right. So what you're saying is you're taking a much more rational approach to Andrew Wiggins as a basketball player than Nick Wright. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, our friend Nick pays the bills by getting Warrior fans up in arms.
He does. He's
friend of the show, Nick Wright.
He is the exact counter to this show, which is, you're right. He does. He drives people to light years, which, shout out Nick Wright. Thanks for doing your job.
Thank you, Nick, for supporting us.
Wiggins is a bad basketball player. He's owed $95 million over the next 3 years, starting next year. It's unspeakable they did this. People think I dislike the Warriors. There's things they've done that have irritated me. But going into this year, I said I thought they could be the sixth seed. I thought that if Klay came back at the end of the season, they could be dangerous. And that starting next year, we'll see if they can rejuvenate the old Splash Brother 15-16 team and be dangerous. It's over for them now. We will never see Steph in another NBA Finals, ever. They have no path forward. Draymond's 30. Klay's 30. Steph's about to be 32 when he takes the court again in mid-March, one would assume. They are Draymond, Wiggins, Klay, and Steph next year, $128 million for the cap. Cap's 115. They have no way to get better now. And you can say, oh, well, now they have their top five pick. If Minnesota's terrible next year, a good pick there. Man, young players do not help you in the playoffs, unless you're the Raptors. The last young player to make a big impact in the NBA Finals prior to the Raptors was Kawhi 7 years ago. I can't believe Bob Myers did this. I'm shocked that they went this route instead of what you're saying. Take your own pick, pair it with your best asset that you actually might move, and try to get someone that can help you. I would have loved to see Steph Curry's live reaction to this.
All right, so Nick Wright going on about how he's a bad basketball player. By the way, Ben, did you see Matt Barnes arguing with him?
I did. Matt Barnes, I love Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes can do no wrong in my eyes in the history of ever.
I feel like, you know, I don't want to take Nick Wright's side here, but they're talking about two different things. Objectively, Wiggins is not a bad basketball player, but the question is, can he be an effective basketball player in winning? You know, anyone who scores 20 points a game is not a bad player, but can you score 20 in a way that helps your team win? That's the question. Warrior fans are very used to players who can drop 20 and lead you to, you know, 25 wins a season, right? That's pretty much the entire 90s and 00s for us.
Yep.
The question is, can Wiggins harness the talents he has in an effective way to help the team win? And you know what? I think it's time for our first BetOnline AG take of the week.
Whoa, look at you weaving in the sponsor. I like it. This is effective.
BetOnline AG is your online sportsbook expert. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for 50% welcome bonus. So my take is, I think it's going to work. I think he's going to be better than Harrison Barnes was for the Warriors. I think the Warriors deep down kind of want to use their picks plus Wiggins' contract and trade him for Giannis or for Embiid or someone, you know, like a big name clout superstar, right?
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to have to ride with Wiggins for at least all of next year. Who knows what happens beyond that? We've seen in the NBA things change really quick, and you think a team's going to stay together for 5 years and they won't. But I think in the short term, the idea that they're going to be able to flip Wiggins and picks for like their next KD, it's probably not going to happen this summer. And so that means the onus is going to be on the team to get the most out of Wiggins to help them compete for the 2020-2021 season. I think you're going to be dealing with a highly motivated Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson, who spent this entire year hearing people talk about how overrated they are and kind of dancing on their grave. And I think Andrew Wiggins is a player who, if he's plugged into a defined role in a well-coached team with leaders who will encourage him, Steph Curry is not going to get on him. Steph and Dre will play good cop, bad cop. I think you're going to see whatever the good third option version of Andrew Wiggins is next year. And that's my BetOnline AG take of the week.
This is a lot more of an uplifting pod than the right after the trade happened.
I'm sure this will be released and Miami will slap him by 30 and Wiggins will go 5 for 21 from the field tomorrow and I'll feel differently.
Well, of course. Yeah. But I want to disagree with you from just a basis of we're doing a podcast and it's probably more entertaining, but from what, you know, obviously again, small sample size, like let's put that in. But last night you just start imagining, right? You start imagining Steph, you start imagining Klay and Draymond there, and you see where kind of Wiggins would naturally fit. And I think he'd be fine with that, kind of taking a lesser role offensively and defensively as well. So I do think positionally he just fits better than D'Angelo Russell, right? Like D'Lo was always just,
that's been the team spin this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it is objectively true. He's right. A wing. D'Lo's a point guard. With Steph and D'Lo, they were going to always have a Dame CJ type of dynamic.
And it was also just stylistically, Steph and D'Lo were always just going to play differently. And maybe that's good if you were kind of staggering them in terms of their playing time. But D'Lo was never going to be that up-tempo guy. And Wiggins, like, he'll fly around. Like, he's, again, we talked about his athleticism. He could fit into that very, very well. And Steph loves to run. Obviously, Klay is going to be on that trail. And then you kind of have Wiggins, you know, as a lob threat. Like, that's an interesting mix offensively. So, and Draymond, like, the idea of him kind of having those three as options. Obviously, he had that with when KD was in the mix, and Wiggins is nowhere near the player that KD is. But I mean, it's still a solid option to have, and it's just about fit at this point. Can they make it all fit? And you know, it remains.
And obviously, they need to add a couple vets.
Sure,
former Warrior, and you know, kind of Warrior fans thought he was coming back for sure. Now we know Andre Iguodala will not be in a Warriors uniform next year. So that's one vet we know we're not getting back, but you know, they obviously need to add some more things around it, but I'm excited. I feel like the hardest part of this trade is we're not going to get to see, we're not really going to be able to evaluate any of this stuff for another 9 to 12 months.
Sure.
We can see little signs. We saw a little sign against the Lakers. You're like, you know what? This guy, at least he has a baseline of talent that's really interesting that you want to see. He also has a long track record of being a huge disappointment. So it's all fascinating. And, you know, hopefully Steph comes back in early March. So at least we get to see that. At least we get to see a little Steph, Draymond, and Wiggins surrounded by a bunch of young guys. You know, it's not going to be close to what they hope to put together in the summer, but at least it gives us a little idea. Obviously, you get Klay Thompson back, and hopefully they add a couple vets who can contribute. Maybe they get Glenn Robinson the third back. I don't know. They have tools, they have options of what they could do with it. But all this stuff kind of points to you know, it's an interesting time for the Warriors because Steph is gonna be 32 very soon. Klay turned 30 this weekend, Draymond turns 30 in a month. They're entering the back nine. And the window's not shut for those three, but it's, are we closer to the end than the beginning?
It's definitely starting to close. It's very much closer to the end than the beginning, unfortunately. But I don't know if that's not a bad thing. They've had an amazing run so far. It feels like, you know, they're just kind of ramping up, but in reality, you know, this 5-year championship run has kind of just been so insane that I think we just all think Steph, Clay, and Draymond are going to play forever, and that's not possible.
Joe Jacob's like, why not?
Yeah, no, why not? I'm sure he's going to figure
we're
out.
We're in Silicon Valley. Someone can figure that technology out.
How to de-age people? Yeah, absolutely. Just go. What's that?
Do you think he's called Bob Myers into a meeting and played Benjamin Buttons like on a projector and been like, figure this out?
Yes. That's why Bob is stressed. That's why he's just out there. This is the first time he's had to make like trades in the middle of the season. He's like, this dude wants me to do a Benjamin Button situation. I can't do it. Side note, real quick, while this is on my mind, do you think secretly they've sent Andre to Miami to help them obviously become really good and to beat a combination of like Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, or Giannis, thus directing one of those three players to the Warriors? I don't know.
The mole 2.0?
Like, this is a light years mole. This isn't even mole 2.0. This is mole light years 0.0.
I mean, for those who don't remember, when the Warriors beat Denver and then Andre signed with them the following summer, George Karl accused him of being a mole and giving the Warriors their secrets.
Right.
So, it's possible. It's definitely possible. We saw the way Andre wanted to protect Steph's legacy last year. I don't know, but it's fun to dream about. It's fun to think about. I feel like I need to plug it again. We threw it on the premium feed, our reactions to all the trade deadlines and where they go. Coming up after Reed, we're going to get Jonathan Wasserman on here. Blue Wire Network's host of the draftable or the lottery podcast. One of the best draft guys you can read out there. He just had a mock draft he threw up yesterday online. Had the Warriors drafting Anthony Edwards. Going to ask him about a few prospects there.
Absolutely, yeah. Wasserman's one of the best. I crossed over with him when I worked at Bleacher Report. So he's still, you know, pumping out amazing, amazing things. So before we get to Jonathan Wasserman, let's take a break to talk about our friends over at Untuck It. Have you ever seen an untucked button down? Straight up, they look bad. Why? Because they weren't meant to be worn that way. Thankfully, there's Untuck It, the original button down shirt actually designed to be worn, wait for it, untucked. No matter your shape or size, Untuck It shirts always fall at the perfect untucked length. With more than 50 plus fit combinations, Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. I got a couple of Untuck It shirts since they've been part of the Blue Wire fam for a little bit, and I'm a short dude, and you know that's been my problem with the dress shirts when you're trying to wear it casually. They always fall too long. Untuck It shirts do not. Choose from styles like wrinkle-free button-downs, super soft flannels, outerwear, and more. With Untuck It, your shirts will never look baggy, bulgy, too long, or too big again. And their website is super easy to use. They even have a whole page devoted to helping you find your fit. So, whether you're shopping for the perfect gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untuck It is the way to go. Visit untuckit.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's untuckit.com, untuckit.com, promo code BLUE, BLUE, for 20% off at checkout.
And now we have Jonathan Wasserman of the Lottery Podcast on Blue Wire Network and lead draft analyst for Bleach Report. Is that the official title I should give you, Jonathan?
Yeah, I like that title. Lead draft analyst. Let's go with that.
Perfect. So I feel like I gotta start with this. How long have you been doing doing draft coverage for? How many years now? Like, I know you definitely were doing it back when Wiggins was a was supposed to be, you know, the number one and a game changing prospect in 2014.
Yeah, I was at Bleacher Report when Wiggins was at Kansas. How long have I been doing this? I mean, I started at NBADraft.net in 2009, I think. Spent a couple of years there, and my first draft covering for Bleacher Report was Anthony Bennett. So,
oh, nice! You start off with a nice big old bust.
Yeah. So that's how long, I don't know. This is, I think this is my eighth season with Bleacher Report.
Nice. So look, I feel like we need to start on the Wiggins stuff. So like you've covered him since he was a big time prospect, and obviously, I mean, he's a pro player. He's clearly a starting caliber NBA player, but he hasn't quite turned into the player many had hoped when he was a prospect. So can you kind of walk me through what you thought of him when he was when he was at Kansas or when he was coming up in high school, and kind of what you think's gone wrong for him so far?
Yeah, I mean, so he was such an obvious talent. There was a lot of hype on Wiggins coming out of high school. And then he got to Kansas, and he still goes number one in the draft. He probably doesn't go number one if Embiid didn't get hurt during the pre-draft process. And personally, I had Embiid number one until that injury. And I think that, I mean, while you could recognize the talent with Wiggins, it was kind of the same question we're asking about Anthony Edwards, who's at Georgia this year, who could be the first pick. And it's like, you have this talent, you know he's going to be a productive pro, but can it translate to winning basketball? And so he's a guard, that great style, guard slash wing, great size, but he doesn't really create particularly well. He's not much of a passer, and he's not a great jump shooter, but he's got this unbelievable athletic ability. You see these flashes of shot make, and you see the flashes of pull up game, and his transition offense, and you kind of just hope he would put it all together. And listen, he's still a guy who pumps in 20 a game year after year. But it hasn't translated to wins. I mean, and I think the change of scenery is really going to be good for him. I mean, obviously having better players around him is going to help, and it's going to kind of like kill the opportunity. Like sometimes he just gets carried away and takes those bad shots. He's not even going to have the chance to do that, with Clay and Steph, when the offense running through them. So I think he's taken some crap that maybe he doesn't deserve based on his role, and he just wasn't built for that role in terms of efficiency and translating to winning basketball. But I think he's going to end up winning back some support once he gets comfortable in Golden State.
Well, he's going to get the opportunity to take some of those bad shots for at least a couple more weeks before Steph comes back.
Yeah, I almost forgot that he still has to play this year. I was just already fast-forwarding.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how every Warrior fan is thinking of it. They're trying to think of it in perspective of how it's going to look when all the pieces come back. So you mentioned Anthony Edwards as the comp, which is actually kind of funny. Andy, my co-host, who's still on vacation for another week, watched one game of Anthony Edwards. It's like, hey, it kind of reminds me of Wiggins.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same idea where you just have an obvious athletic talent who could score a lot of points, but does he make guys around him better, and does he score within the flow of the offense, or does he need to take 10 dribbles and then pull up?
Yeah, I mean, so I was kind of arguing about this with someone that Wiggins might be a litmus test for nature versus nurture. Like, you wonder if he ends up kind of this player that most people kind of view as a disappointment if he got drafted to the Celtics or the Spurs or a system where it's very clear they're not going to let him just dribble around in a circle all day. And I guess we're going to get to see it with Wiggins now that he's on the Warriors, especially when Steph and Clay come back. I guess from your standpoint, you're saying Edwards is kind of that guy too. Like, if he isn't reined in, he's going to turn into kind of a lower efficiency type of player.
Yeah. I mean, if he goes to a bad team where he's the top option, it's going to be bad news. He's just, even scouts will say, it's just low basketball IQ. He just doesn't have a great feel. He gets carried away. He gets, he starts really feeling himself. And he definitely loves the highlight, the hero jumper. And he's 6'5", 225, but he doesn't play like that sometimes. And he really loves those fadeaways and the hold the ball for 5 seconds, take a jab step, and then shoot it. And he loves the perimeter.
Sounds like James Harden.
Yeah, but he's, you know, of course he's 18, 19. He's not that.
Right.
It's only so, you can only be so efficient doing playing that style of ball. And, you know, his highlights are awesome, and his lowlights are like his bad games are like, Jesus, this is the number one pick in the draft. Just because he just doesn't have the feel to match the talent and the skill up. Like, he's really skilled, but he just doesn't really apply that skill at the right times. And so it'll be interesting to see how, you know, he's still 18 years old. I mean, he's going to have that excuse for the next couple of years.
Right.
But we'll see how he adapts over the next couple of years.
One of the things people have criticized Andrew Wiggins for over the years is kind of motor. Like, mm-hmm. Andrew Wiggins is very prone to floating out of games and maybe not always bringing it on the defensive side. He did last night against the Lakers in his debut, which probably made Warrior fans feel better. But he definitely has that ability to float in and out of a game. Like, he's not a, I don't know who I'm thinking of. Like Dwayne Wade or like Paul George, those type of games, like, their physical presence is always noted.
Mm-hmm.
Wiggins has kind of been in and out of that. Is Edwards in that same mold where he floats out of a game, or is there always kind of the presence at least on one end?
No, he's totally a guy who floats.
Okay.
I'll never forget one of the, I think the first time I saw him live, he was in high school, and I mean, like, 20 minutes went by and I, like, forgot he was on the floor. He has games like that where he's just not, you know, he doesn't have that intensity. I think that's really the word
right.
I'm looking for. He's not, you know, his eyes aren't always lit up. And sometimes defensively, like, he doesn't care sometimes. And you just kind of wish he cared a little bit more. And then again, Ben Simmons was kind of the same way in college, where sometimes you criticize him. He's sure. almost like, it, like, nitpick too much, because you see, you watch all these possessions and you find a couple here and there where, you know, he's just reaching for the ball and a guy's going to score around. He could foul him, he chooses not to. But then we find out actually he's a pretty good defender. And sometimes we kind of overanalyze these lapses from teenagers in college.
Sure.
But he hasn't. There's no question about it. There are games this year where he is just, you know, it's like, this is a nationally televised game against Kentucky. You got to be locked in, and there are just possessions where he's got, you know, gets caught, guys go backdoor on him. He's caught reaching, just flat-footed offensively.
Right.
He'll dribble, and then launch a pull-up without passing it once. And, you know, he's just not totally locked in all the time yet. Just have to wonder, is this just him being a teenager, or is this like a legit problem you have to worry about for the rest of his career?
Yeah. As you describe that, he sounds like someone Steve Kerr will not want, but he could get overruled on that one. He got overruled on the D'Lo trade, and now he has Andrew Wiggins, who at least fits something he wants to work with.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an interesting thing, because, like, everyone's kind of assuming the Warriors are just going to package their picks and get, like, you know, name your superstar, right? But, like, the reality of the matter is it's more than likely they're going to have to keep and develop this pick. And if an opportunity comes up for a trade down the line, then, you know, they'll take it. But, you know, it's only an opportunity if they actually develop the player and make the right pick. So that's why the pick's so important. I'm looking at your mock that you – did you publish on Saturday or Sunday this weekend? One of those.
It went up on – I don't even know. It went up sometime over the past couple of days.
Either way, the most recent mock.
Yeah.
You have Anthony Edwards at number one. We've talked about him extensively. You have Denny. How do I pronounce his last name?
Denny Avdija.
Avdija from Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen his name in the top 10. I can't say I've watched him. I mean, other than a couple highlights here or there, but you and I both know. If you don't look good on YouTube, you know, there's a problem. So tell me about him.
Yeah, so he's playing really well. He's been on the radar for a long time, you know, playing in FIBA. So it's not like he's coming out of nowhere or anything. And this past summer, he was the MVP of the U20 European Championships. He's completely well-rounded, 6'8". He scores, he passes, he defends, he can knock down threes. I mean, he could do a little bit of everything. You know, versatility is the theme with Avdija. I think the big question with him is he elite in any one area? Can he be a star at the next level? But, you know, I put him at number two And that says something about the rest of the field. It also says something about, you know, the Cavaliers have that second pick. And I think Fit, because nobody really stands out as like the obvious best player, I think Fit is going to play a role in this draft. And we always talk about, you know, best player available over filling a need, but best player available is not going to be obvious. And so Fit is going to play a role. And Abdia, I think, is a guy who's as good as any of the other guys. And he happens to fit a need for Cleveland on the wing. But he's playing really well right now in EuroLeague. He's been very efficient. He's been very efficient and a lot more productive in the Israeli league, not as competitive as EuroLeague, but he's getting more minutes there. And you can just see his confidence rising. He's hitting more jumpers. It kind of reminds me of Gallinari, that type of player. Great size, who could probably play the three or the four. I think his shooting percentages will continue to rise. I wouldn't really put too much stock into whatever his three-point numbers are now. The eye test says that he can make jump shots. And so he's just a very complete player. You know, whether he's going to be a superstar, you know, I probably wouldn't put my money on it, but I think he could be a Gallinari-level type of player.
And by the way, Gallinari has been a guy who's averaged like 23-6 efficiently for...
Right. He doesn't have like the star label, but the numbers are star quality.
I mean, he's just a productive winning player.
Yeah.
So he's more of a secondary playmaker off the wing than like, I mean, Luka is obviously playing like a James Harden pure top of the key point guard type role. So
yeah,
that's what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah, more of a secondary guy. He's like in European championships, he averaged over 5 assists a game. He's 6'8". So he plays some point wing. He's not your lead ball handler, but yeah, secondary playmaker. But he'll still be a scorer first, and I think he's going to add value defensively. And we talked about competitiveness. This guy doesn't have those stretches where he kind of loses focus. He is locked in, super fiery, competitive, all those buzzwords to describe, a high-energy player.
Yeah, quite frankly, the way the Warriors want to play, which is same to the Spurs and the Celtics and all those teams, like they tend to prefer players who come from like the European type of system of basketball anyway. So I definitely think he's on the radar for the Warriors. Whether he'll be the pick, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's taking him number one overall just seems tough because he doesn't have the upside that a guy like Edwards has or LaMelo Ball. He's more of the high floor, safer pick, which I think in this draft, I think teams are going to value a high floor just because you want that certainty because there's so much uncertainty in this draft.
So there's two names that have been recently linked to the Warriors. So we're going to do them one by one. One, you have at number four, Tyrese Haliburton. The Warriors sent their entire contingent to watch him. It must have been about 3 weeks ago now. It was in early January, but anytime you get not just Bob Myers, but you get like Larry Harris and the Lacobs and everything, that lets you know that if nothing else, they're trying to let people know that they're there. Mm-hmm. And to me, he's a very interesting prospect. Can you talk about him a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, he's like a Lonzo Ball clone in all the good ways and the not so good ways. His assist turnover ratio is outstanding. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but he's averaging around between 7 and 8 assists per game and under 3 turnovers. Just an excellent passer, high IQ guy. It's a shame that he doesn't have good players around him at Iowa State. But just some guy who is, like Lonzo Ball can impact games without scoring at a high level. And that's the same thing with Haliburton. And this year, he's improved his shooting. He's up to 41%, I believe, making over 2 threes per game. Another similarity to Lonzo, he's got this weird release. And I think for me, that raised some questions about, will it translate and can he shoot off the dribble? And I still have some of those questions about whether he could shoot off the dribble, but he's been pretty accurate off the catch. And when given room, he's certainly improved his pull-up game this year. He's also got a good floater, which I personally value in ball handlers. And so he's just another one of these high-floor guys who you know is going to contribute as a passer, at the least. He's just a really good pick-and-roll facilitator and just good decision maker, somebody you really trust with the ball in his hands. And if he can make enough open jumpers, I think he's got a chance to be a good starting point guard in the NBA.
Yeah, to me, watching him, I saw he was just clearly the smartest player on the floor. Like, mm-hmm. You can, when you watch a game and someone's just making decisions like a half second quicker than everyone else on the court. I always go back to like Jason Kidd. Obviously, he's not Jason Kidd, but like the, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area. That's kind of like a defining characteristic of someone I'd say is just a very high IQ player. The other thing that stands out to me with him is something the Warriors really value, which is he's a big point guard. Yeah. Is he 6'6"?
Yeah, 6'5", 6'6".
So they love that because obviously Steph Curry is as valuable off ball as he is on ball, but mm-hmm. getting him off ball requires you to have someone else handling the ball, and having kind of tall ball handlers, you know, with Livingston and Iguodala in the past, I mean, we saw how successful that was. You can just kind of see how this is a very obvious fit for how the Warriors want to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He's going to fit in anywhere. And for a team like the Warriors who – they move, you know, their ball movement, constant movement in general. I mean, he's certainly a fit, particularly just again the passing and the catch and shooting. He should be a nice fit there.
Yeah, he's one of the if you really like him, you almost hope the Warriors don't win the lottery so right. you can like validate taking him 3 or 4 overall without like the pressure of having to pick him against someone with clearly a higher ceiling.
Yeah, it's funny because I came into this and I could have never imagined putting him above guys like Cole Anthony.
Right.
Just his, you just trust Halliburton so much more than a guy like Cole Anthony, who's younger, more explosive, much better scorer. But I think come draft time, teams are just going to feel so much more comfortable with a guy like Halliburton, who they just know is going to come in and make winning plays and good decisions.
Yeah. So the second player who's been linked to the Warriors and Connor Letourneau of the SF Chronicle wrote about this, is Obi Toppin. And mm-hmm. it's unclear how much it is that they like him versus they'd actually be willing to take him in the top five. Those are two completely different things. But it's been made known that the Warriors really like him as a player. He's kind of like Halliburton in the sense of I don't think anyone had him in their top 10 last summer.
Right.
But the play has been, and, you know, just kind of the uncertainty of all the players makes it kind of a case. Can you kind of talk about his game?
Yeah, another high floor guy who you just, he's a guaranteed NBA player. He really got much better from last year. Even he was good as a freshman. He was one of those under the radar guys, not highly recruited. And he kind of came as like a potential breakout guy to watch, and he's totally delivered. 6'9". Really strong. I mean, he looks like just looking at it, he looks like Amari Stoudemire the way he plays, really effective around. He leads the country in dunks, he's really improved his skill level out of the post, knocking down open threes. He's a pretty good passer, even though the assist rate, you know, doesn't scream passer. Right. He's a good passer. I think the big thing with him is the shooting development legitimate, and is he going to be a liability on defense? And I think when I'm kind of projecting him to the next level, I'm seeing him like another version of John Collins. You know, Collins is a really productive guy, but will his value ever meet his stat lines? And I think that's kind of be the question with Obi. But in this draft, again, if you can guarantee yourself John Collins, right. I think you take him in the top 8 or so. Also, just a really high energy guy, which again plays to his I-4. Another weird thing with him is he's got a weirdly low rebounding rate, and I really haven't figured out why. And
right.
I'm not sure if that matters.
Well, that goes to that's like Amari too.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. For all the talent, the rebounding was always kind of like pedestrian.
Right. The low rebounding, he didn't block as many shots as you'd like. I don't know if he has the defensive instincts to be a plus defender, but I think for a guy like that, you just hope he's average because, you know, offensively, he's going to be a plus offensive player.
Is he? Is he like a legit 6'9", 6'10"? I can't tell just because, well, every other college player's kind of got the same question.
Yeah, I think he's, I would say 6'9". I don't know, I forget if they list him at 6'9 or 6'10", but just using the eye test, I would say he looks bigger than 6'8", put it that way.
Okay.
And he's strong. I mean, he's got really broad shoulders, big-time leaper. I think physically he shouldn't have any problems.
So he's got like ideal power forward size.
Yeah, he's like your classic traditional power forward.
Right. So a center in the NBA.
Yeah, honestly, it's funny you say that. I think best case scenario is him playing center.
Yeah, and that's kind of if he really can play that, that's, I mean, that makes him more valuable to the Warriors because they got Draymond at power forward. And if not Draymond, Eric Paschal's playing well. But either way, they kind of want a big wing as opposed to, you know, a John Collins type at power forward. And I think that's kind of the trend most teams are going anyway.
Yeah.
Which brings me to another center who you currently have at number six, James Wiseman. Warriors, before the season started, all the talk was about Wiseman. I think that was just because he had a very big a big name in high school and the physical measurements are out of this world. Yeah. But obviously we didn't get to see much of him. Has anything changed with how people feel about him or how you feel about him?
I think he's exactly where I had him coming in. I mean, again, we only saw him for like 2.5 games. The one game that mattered, the Oregon game, he picked up 2 fouls in like 2 minutes. And, you know, in college basketball, that means you sit the whole half. But he's really pretty much all physical tools, measurements, and athleticism, and very limited skill. You know, you're totally betting on skill development if you're going to take him high. He's shown, you know, in highlight, you could look at his highlight reel mixtapes, and you see him hit fallaway jumpers, and you see him make open threes, but he's not good at them. And sometimes he thinks he is, and he tries to prove that he's like a guard or a wing, and it's just, that's just not his game. He is a rim runner, a finisher, offensive rebounder. He'll block shots. That's his game. And we'll see if I'm not betting on him. I wouldn't put my money on him becoming an efficient post scorer or a stretch big guy. He's so far away from that right now. He would have to make so much improvements to his skill level to be that type of guy. I didn't watch a ton of, you can answer this for me, like why did it not work for Willie Cauley-Stein in Golden State?
It's not that it didn't work for Willie Cauley-Stein. It's that they're obviously gunning for the number one pick. They just wanted to shed salary and get out of the repeater tax.
Okay.
He's a guy who they actually have said they might want to bring him back. I think he's been okay. It's basically been the same Willie. He does a lot of good things, and then there's just the brain farts where you're just kind of like it's a little JaVale-ish, I guess, the best way to put it.
Yeah, and listen, Wiseman has those brain farts too, and he's I wouldn't say that he's a guy you want guarding around the perimeter. His whole high school career, the big knock, you know, everyone knew how talented he was. The big knock on him was he's not very competitive. He's casual out there. His face is always pretty plain. He just doesn't bring a lot of energy to the table. And sometimes he just takes these shots that you're like, what are you doing? You have a 7'6 wingspan. You're 7'1, 240. Stop falling away from 20 feet. And so that's the knock on him. But I figured, you know, that he played that scene, whatever the role was Cauley-Stein played for Golden State, that would be kind of what Wiseman does if he were to join them.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the truth of the matter is, like, Warrior fans need to realize any one of the guys they draft here is 15 minutes per game off the bench.
Right.
If the Warriors are actually a 50-plus win team, like, none of them are going to be able to play 30 minutes with the expectation you're going to win 55 games.
Right.
I guess I'll end with this question for you. We haven't really talked about LaMelo Ball. We talked about that last time, though. If you were the Warriors, or who do you think the Warriors will like most in this? If I tell you the coaching staff really values IQ and competitiveness more than anything, but management's looking for, I don't want to say the best trade chip, but the highest upside guy. And those are two completely different things. So I don't know where they come out on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's so split. There's no consensus anything.
Right.
And I have LaMelo Ball as the number one prospect. I would take him first overall. And I think he'd be a fine fit in Golden State. He's as good a passer as Haliburton. He doesn't shoot as well right now. But he's got a lot more scoring upside. There's a lot more creation ability to his game than Haliburton does. You know, if Haliburton's great with the ball screen, but put him in isolation, he's not much of a threat. I think LaMelo can be that threat. I think he's the guy who has the scoring upside plus the guaranteed passing is going to translate. There are some questions about his competitiveness. He's always been in a weird situation where the spotlight's always been on him, and he's been able to pretty much call the shots on whatever team he's been on. So it'll be interesting to see how he translates, how coachable he is at the next level. you know, Danny Avdija, honestly, he really checks the boxes of everything you just said, in terms of fitting in and competitiveness, high IQ guy who's going to be able to play alongside anybody. You can move him around to three different positions. So he's going to be interesting to see what Golden State, what pick they have, because to me, he stands out as an obvious fit, just a mature type of player who can, like you said, come in for 15 minutes, play hard, make good decisions, compete defensively, make open shots, and pass when needed to. So I think LaMelo Ball in the vacuum has the upside to me, but the best fit might be a guy like Avdija.
I got to ask you this right before we get out of here. Yeah. You have Avdija, and there's one other wing in the top 10. The Warriors would like to draft a wing. This isn't a wing draft. Mm-hmm. Isaac Okoro?
Yeah.
I was reading your summary here, and you kind of—is it Marcus Smart you compare him to?
A scout did. Like, I think in terms of
in your scouting piece,
how's his shooting going to develop? And I think the scout told me, eventually he can be like a guy who shoots 34% from downtown. So right now, Okoro is not a good shooter, but he can make shots. And so he's 18, and you know, by the time six more seasons, he should be like an average, capable shooter. But of course, another guy like Avdija who's going to fit in everywhere, really competitive, probably the best wing defender in the draft. Offensively, he just doesn't have enough to in his bag right now in terms of creating shots and not having that reliable jumper. And that's kind of where he's maybe Avdija will have the edge. But another guy who will fit in anywhere and somebody who could probably play right away just based on his defensive toughness alone.
Got it. So the offense is a project, but you know the defense will immediately translate.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Jonathan, I appreciate your time. You want to plug anything before you get out of here?
No, like you said, I had the mock draft that came up. I just did a piece on grading all the rookies. You might want to skip over the Jordan Poole grade. But otherwise,
he had his best game of the season last night. You clearly wrote it before last night.
Yeah. We'll see if that would impact my grade. But yeah, constant stuff coming out. Busy week this week. I think we have another mock draft coming out at the end of the week. And so, I don't know. Keep tuned into the draft coverage.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.